Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Bet, right after the Mishnah. The Mishnah discussed that Kol Yotzei Min Ha'Etz Ein Madlikim Bo Ela Pishtan. Any derivative of the tree we don't light with except Pishtan. Kol Yotzei Min Ha'Etz Amitamei Tumat Olim Ela Pishtan. Whatever is Yotzei Min Ha'Etz does not have a din of Tumat Olim Ela Pishtan. Again, we discussed that all other materials do create an Ohel. The question is, does the Ohel itself become Tamei? And that is only true by Pishtan. The Ohel itself will become Tamei, not only create an Ohel, but become Tamei as well. Then we brought the pasuk from Yehoshua that told us that Pishtan does have a classification of eights, and that's why formulation of Mishnah is that way. Now we're going to about to discuss the latter half of the Mishnah, which is a Yotzei Min Ha'Etz. Eino mitamei tumat olim el Pishtan minolan. How do we know that? So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Gamar Ohel, Ohel mimishkan. It's a gzeirat shava that they learn out from the Mishkan. Tiv hocha, zota Torah adam ki omut be'ohel. By the parsha of Chukat, where it discusses tumat ha'meit, it says tumat ha'ohel, it says zota Torah adam ki omut be'ohel, when it's in an ohel. Tiv hatam, by the Mishkan, it says vayifros et ha'ohel al Mishkan. They place the ohel on top of the Mishkan. What we call the Mishkan also includes the chatzer as well. But the main area of the Mishkan is where the Kodesh and Kodesh Kodeshim are housed. It has krashim, wooden boards that go around it. And then it has covers on top of it. The first layer of covers are made out of yiriot shesh mazar. They're made out of linen, pishtan. The second layer of cover is made out of yiriot izim, from the goat's hair. Then the third level, which is here, we're going to see in Agamah Machloket, whether there's a third and fourth level of cover, or if it's just a third level of mixed cover, which is Ayalim Adumim and the Orot Techashim. Those are skins made out of the Ayalim Adumim and Orot Techashim, and the Gemara will discuss that today. What the Gemara is pointing out is that by Yifroset the Ohel al Mishkan, he put the Ohel on top of the Mishkan. So the Ohel that's being defined here is the first cover on the Mishkan. The first cover on the Mishkan is made out of Yiriot Shesh Mazar, which is linen. So that is what an Ohel, the definition of Ohel here is, Pishtan is linen, and that connects Gezeir Shava back to Zot HaTorah, Adam Ki Amut Be'Ohel. Mal Alan Shel Pishtan Karui Ohel, Afkan Shel Pishtan Karui Ohel. Just like by the Mishkan, the Pishtan is what's called the Ohel. So to over here, that the Pishtan is called the Ohel. Ilam Alahan Shizurin Vechutan Kaful Vav. Just like by the Mishkan, there's a special way to prepare it. First of all, they were shizurim, they were twisted, they were twined, and then v'chutan kaful vav. And then they also wore six ply, a very thick rope that was used for the weaving. So afkan, maybe over here too, the ohel has to have that requirement of shizurim v'chutan kaful vav. Tamad omar, ohel, ohel, riba. The terminology ohel is used multiple times there, b'zot ha'torah adam ki amut b'ohel. And ohel is a ribuy, to say that not just the way it was in the Mishkan, but even if it's not exactly the way it was in the Mishkan. It says, E-O-L-O, Riba, Filuko Mile Nami. If O-L-O, the word O-L is used multiple times in order to be Merabet, to include other things, then include everything. Why are you limiting yourself to Pishtan? So when it says, in King Gzereshava, Mahanile, then the Gzereshava doesn't have any value. If you include everything, then the Gzereshava is meaningless. So what we say is, the Gzereshava tells us Pishtan, teaches the information about the material, and then OLOL teaches us that we're not exactly like we were in the Mishkan. We don't have the same standards or requirements. It just has to be made of Pishtan. So Gemara says, Ve'eima mala halan krashim afkan krashim. Why don't we say that just like over there by the Mishkan, it was the boards. So too over here, it's the boards. The way Rashi reads that is that Ve'eima de'etz namikare ohel or ikre ohel. Let us say that the wood is also called ohel, and therefore, if you had a covering or a ohel made out of wood, it'd also be mikabel tuma. The Tosafot doesn't like that explanation, because it says that the walls, the fnot, are not called ohel or the top. We know that from Sukkah. Fnot are very different than the kirui, than the ceiling or the skach that's on top. Why would you have a havamina to think that there should be eights, should be the cover on top? But rather, the question of the Gemara is, maybe it should only be when there is wood, that is the walls, and Pishtan is the cover, that's when you'll have Tumah. If you want to replicate what was in the Mishkan, maybe the same way in the Mishkan that you had Pishtan on top of Krashim, so to over here, maybe you'll need Pishtan on top of Krashim in order to create an Ohel that will be Mikabel Tumah. So Gemara says, that's not correct, because Amakra Vasita Krashim La Mishkan. You will make Krashim to support the Mishkan. Mishkan Karui Mishkan, Ve'ein Krashim Karui Mishkan. The Mishkan is called the Mishkan, and the Krashim are not called the Mishkan. My point is that when we used the Pasuk before, Vayifros Et Ohel Ala Mishkan, So when they put the oil on top of the Mishkan is what they're referring to here, and the Mishkan is the Ohel, and the Kreshim don't have a definition of Ohel. The word Ohel is only associated with the cover and with the Mishkan itself, but not with the Kreshim. As Rashi points out, Mishkan Ikreol Deftivet Mishkan Ohel Moed. Clear that the word Mishkan is associated with the cover or with the Ohel, not with the walls. So therefore the walls are not included in what we are making the Gezer Shav about, whether it's the Ohel or the Mishkan. Melamiata Basita Michse La Ohel. We should make a cover for the Ohel. So on top of the Yiriot Sheish Mezar, we said before, our Yiriot Izim. And on top of the Yiriot Izim are the Orot Elim, Adamim, and the Orot Chashim. So here we say, Basita Michse La Ohel. They have another cover on top of the Ohel. So Hachanami. Michse lo ikre ohel. There's two different words. One is a michse, a cover for the ohel, and the other one is the ohel. L'had debay Rabbi Lazar, or be matzmei amahu shitamei be'ohel meit. What about a skin of a non-kosher animal? Would that be mikabel tuma be'ohel meit? Hashto, or be mateora lo temitamei, or be matzmei ami boi. If the paradigm of where we're learning ohel from is the Mishkan, and in the Mishkan, we don't say that the Orot that were on top are classified as an ohel, which means that only pishtan is classified as an ohel that will be mekabel tuma, not even kosher animals. Kosher animals that are found in the Mishkan, whose skins are used on top, and there we rejected that as being an ohel because it's called a mechse, it's called a cover, not an ohel. We say no tuma for anything besides pishtan. Well, if by the kosher animals that were used in the Mishkan, there is no tuma to ohel, then why would you ever pose a question about non-kosher animals, whether they are mekabel tuma as an ohel? They're not even in the picture. They're not even in the Mishkan. And they're not being in the Mishkan. There's no way they would qualify to become tamei as an ohel. So how do you explain his question? Shiny hotam, tahadar hadre kra. Over there it's a little different because the pasuk brought it back in. Dichtiv, nasua tiriota Mishkan, vet o moed, michsehu, pumukse atachash asher lav, mikish elyon lotachton, ma tachton kori ohel, af elyon kori ohel. They carry the Yiriota Mishkan, the Yiriota are those covers of the Mishkan, vet o moed, and the o moed, michsehu its cover, umikse atachash asher lav, and then the cover of skin that's above it. So there's a hakesh in the pasuk between all of those items. There's the ol moed, the mechseh, and mechseh atachash. So just like the lower area is called an ohel, there's a connection to the upper covers, which will also have or be granted that status of ohel. So just like the lower area is called an ohel, that's the yiriot sheish mashzar, so too the yiriot izim.
In this pasuk is called O Moed, so it's also granted that designation of Ohel. In addition to that, Mechseyu, the cover, which is the Orot Elim Adamim, Mechseya Tachash, and the cover of the Tachash will also be included. Those Elyonim will also have or be granted that status of Ohel.
Because they're brought together in the pasuk. Since they're brought together in the pasuk, that shows us that Orb the same status as Pishtan. Therefore, if the Ohel was made at an Orb Ema, it would be Mikabel Tuma.
So now that we know that or skins, hides, have the same status as pishtan, that they are mekabel tum'ah, as an ohel, then the question of Rabbi Lazar becomes relevant. Now that we know that or behemah has the status of an ohel, does that only apply to behemah Torah? Does that also apply to behemah tmeah? And that was the question that was posed by Rabbi Elazar.
So Gufa, Gemara wants to understand this. Boi Rabbi Elazar or behemah tmeah maushi tameh bitumat olim. What's the story with this Orbe Matameya? Does it accept Tuma when it is the Ohel? Where it says, Maikumi Baile. What's the question?
Rabbi Elazar is the author of the statement at the beginning of the Gemara that we learn everything out of the Mishkan. So what is his question here? If Ohel is learned from Mishkan, and in the Mishkan we were talking about Orot, Behemot, Orot, then why does he have any question as regards to Orot, Behemot, Meot?
Amar Avad Rabba Tacha Shaya Bime Moshe Kami Baile. He wants to know what the animal was called the tachash. So once he knows what the tachash is, he'll know which skins are included under the qualification of ohel. They will be defined as an ohel. Whatever is defined as an ohel is mekabel tuma as an ohel. So if you think that the skins on top are kosher animals, then only kosher animals would be mekabel tuma. If the skins on top were for non-kosher animals, then also non-kosher animal skins would be mekabel tuma as an ohel. Tameh haya, otahor haya. Was the animal kosher or not? Amar Rav Yosef, mighty baile. Why is it even a question? Tanina. We have an explicit Tanaic work that tells us that lo shru l'malachet shemayim el or beimat rabil vad. You only may use for the service of a Kodesh Baruch Hu kosher animals. That's the definition of what you can use or qualifies for. Melechet Shamayim, then we're only talking about kosher animals. Why does Rabbi Elazar have a safek? So Meiti Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba asked, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shnei Michsaot Ayu. They were actually two covers. Echad She'orot Elim Hadamim. Echad She'orot Tichashim. Again, we said they were the Yiriyot. 10 Yiriyot that were made out of Sheish Mazar Pishtan. Then on top of that, there were 11 Yiriyot. These sheets that were connected. They were on top of that, they were made out of the hair of the Izim. On top of that, there was Orot Elim Hadamim and Orot Tichashim. There were skins from the Tachash and the skins from the Elim Hadamim, the red rams. Once we have those last two covers, how does that work, those last two covers? So Rabbi Yehuda claims that they were independent. First they had skins from the Orot Elim Hadamim, and then they had the skins of the Orot Tichashim, two separate covers on top. Whereas Rabbi Nechemiah believes that they were actually one. There was one cover, the Domek Min Tala Ilan. It was equivalent to the Tala Ilan, as Rashi says, is a behemah minumeret. It is a spotted behemah in many colors. Spotted behemah that has many colors. Basically what they said was that they combined the two skins together and made out of it a single skin made up of both the Orot HaTachashim and the Orot HaYalim Madamim. Between them, they made a single cover on top. Now, Vaha Tala Ilan Tamehu, they're describing the cover as being a Tala Ilan. And a Tala Ilan is a non-kosher animal. So, Hachikamar, that doesn't mean that it was a Tala Ilan. It just means that it was like, it looked like a Tala Ilan. Kamin Tala Ilan Hu Sheish Bo Gvanim Harve. It's like a Tala Ilan that has many colors. But not exactly a Tala Ilan, because over there, a Tala Ilan is a non-kosher animal. And over here, we're using kosher animals. We use the Tachash and the Ayalim. I'm Rav Yosef, Hihochi, Hainu Demir Targamina, and I understand the Targum of Tachash now is Saskona. The Targum on the Torah, when it says that it should be made from Or Tachash, calls them the Or Saskona. Shisas Bigvanim Harbe. It rejoices with its many colors. So the Tachash is this colorful animal, and therefore the translation of Tachash into Aramaic is Saskona. Rav Yosef, remember, is a Saginohor, is blind, and therefore he is a Baki in Targum. He knows the Targum because he was not permitted to learn Torah Shebechtav because he can't read the Ktav. So he knew the Torah through the Targum. And that's why Rav Yosef many times speaks about the Targum, or what was the translation of the word in the Targum. So here he explains, Saskona is really an acronym for Sas Bigvanim Harbe, rejoices in many colors. Now Rava Amar, Orbe Matmeya, Dimitamei, Be'ohel Hameit Mehocho. The fact that the Orbe Matmeya is, or accepts Tuma as an Ohel, comes from here. It's not coming out of the Mishkan, because the Mishkan doesn't have any non-kosher animals in it. That's clearly not the source. So where is the source for it? We're talking about so far kosher animal skins, and Pishtan, are definitely included from the OL. Now we want to know, what about the non-kosher animal skins? Titania. Or, O, Be'or. In Nigaim, which we discussed yesterday in the Nigaim, in the Pasuk of Nigaim, it says that, Beged Semer, Beged Pishtim, O, Be'or, and then O, B'chol Melechet, Or. It could have written in the Pasuk, Or. It has an additional bet, which is Be'or. So, Reba, Or, Be, Matmeya. That comes to include, not only a kosher skin, but even skins from non-kosher animals that we mitamei, Tumat Nigaim. B'shalakabia de Kohen. If you handed a Beged, had a piece of clothing to the Kohen, and then the Nega became Tamei in the hands of the Kohen.
That is also included from the extraneous bet in Be'or.
Or, Katzatz Mikulan Vasar Achat Mehen, if he takes a whole bunch of skins, different types of skins or materials, and then puts them together to make into a single weave or a single Beged, Minayin, how do you know that that's also Mekabel Tumat Negaim? Tamil Omar, O Bechol Melechet Or. Anything that involves these types of skins. There's an Eriboy in Negaim of not only Or, which is would have included kosher animals, but even Be'or, which would include non-kosher animal skins, and then B'chol Melechet Or, which is the remainder of the Pasuk, comes to include, even if it's not just one skin, it's made up of multiple different patches of skins, that also will accept Tumat Negaim. Be'ikar HaMifrach. So now, what's the suggestion here? The suggestion is that we'll learn how Tumat Tamei from Negaim. We know by Nigayim that what's classified as clothing includes these skins. So let's say, just like Nigayim, it's Mekabel Tum'ah. So too, by Tum'at Ohel, would also be Mekabel Tum'ah. So the Gemara says, Ikal Mifrach, that's not a good logical argument. Even though Tum'at Mate is more chamur than Nigayim, Nigayim also have certain stringencies that don't apply to Tum'at Mate. By Tumat Nigaim, we know that they have, as we discussed yesterday, Tumat, even in the spools of the warp and the woof, they become Tamei, even if they're not a Beged yet. That's not true by Tumat Ha'oel. Ela Gamar Mishratzim. Learn it out from Shratzim, the Tanya. Or, in the Olor Behema Torah, when a Sheretz comes into contact with a kosher skin that makes it Tamei, or the O is a reboy, and the O or that's written by Shretzim will include not only kosher animal skins, but even non-kosher animal skins. Gilamifrach, again, that doesn't work so well. We want to learn out Tumat Oel from Shretzim. Mal Shretzim, she came mitamim b'kad asho. Shretzim have a chumra, which is that they are mitamei even with size of a lentil. And that's not true by mate. By mate, you need a minimum of a kezayit. So nigayim yochichu. What we'll say is that between the two of them, between the dinim of mega and the dinim of shratzim, in both instances, we know that we've included a non-kosher animal skin. And between the two of them, we'll create a tzad hashaveh, which is the common denominator between them. And the common denominator will teach us the din that we want by ol mate, which is, v'chazar adin, lo re'izeh k're'izeh, v'lo re'izeh k're'izeh. Neither Shratzim is exactly like Negaim, and Negaim is not exactly like Shratzim. Atzad Shaveh Shaveh, the common denominator between them is Sh'or Tamei Behen, that skins do accept Tuma. Vasa Or Be'ima Tameyak Or Be'ima Teoran. And it says that non-kosher skins have the same din as kosher skins. Afani Avi Olamet Sh'or Tamei Bo. We know that Or is Tamei by Olamet because we know that the kosher animal skins are included in the word Ol. So we'll also say there that the equation applies, that just like Or Be'imat Torah is Tamei there, so too Or Be'imat Me'ah will also be Tamei in that case. Because now the Chumrah of Negaim and the Chumrah of Shratzim are wiped out by each other. Because Negaim doesn't have the Chumrah of Ki'ad Asha, and Shratzim don't have the Chumrah of Sheti Ve'erev. Similarly, Rava mi Barnish, obviously, to distinguish between Rava, who was making the original statement. So it's Rava and Biranish, Larvashi, Ikala Mifrach. There is a common denominator between Shratzim and Nigaim, makes them more chamur than Ohel, which is Malatzad Shaveh Shaven. They have a common denominator, Shekem Vein Pachot Mikazayit. They both have Tumah less than a Kazayit. Shratzim is Ki'adasho, and Nigaim is Ki'gris. Both of which are less than a kezayit. Olamate needs a kezayit. Tamar b'meit jenu tamelo kezayit. So now I can't make a limud, a kavachomer, a tzadah shaveh, because they have something that distinguishes them from olamate. And they are more chamur than olamate, and therefore I can't extrapolate from shratzim and the gaim to olamate, even in the common denominator between them. Because their common denominator involves a chumrah that doesn't apply by olamate. Elam arova mi barnish. So Rabbi Barnish now offers an alternative explanation of where we know Or Be'imat Me'ah from. Atya v'kal v'chomer minotza shalizim. We're learning out of a kal v'chomer from hair of the goat. Right? Again, we call it notza, feathers of the goat, because it's plucked out, the way the feathers are plucked out. She'ein mitamei v'negayim. That does not have tumat negayim. Mitamei ba'ohel ha'meit. And yet it does accept tuma in the ohel ha'meit. Because we saw yesterday and the day before that by negayim, tzemer u'pishtim is the only material that accepts tuma when it comes to bigadim. So for there, by notza shalizim, it does not apply. Notza shalizim does not make up a beged that is Mekabel Tumat Negaim. But yet, when it comes to Olam Eit, if you made the Ol out of this hair of goats, then it would be Mekabel Tumat and Olam Eit. So then, Or Be'imat Me'ah comes to a non-kosher skin, Shimitama B'Negaim. It does have Tumat Negaim, because we saw before, Or Be'or. The Be'or came to include even non-kosher animal skins that they are qualified to accept the Tumat Negaim. In Udin Shemitama Be'olamait, certainly it should have Tumah Be'olamait. Now, the Gemara leaves it here. The difficulty with this Gemara is that you basically created the same Libud again, which is I'm trying to learn from Nigaim to Olamait. Nigaim has a din at Semer Pishtim, yes. Notzah Shalizim, no. By Nigaim, we know that Or Be'imat Me'ah is Mikabel Tumah. So now we move over to Olamait. To Olamait, we know that Notzah Shalizim is Mikabel Tumah, because that's one of the covers of the Mishkan. So certainly, Or Be'imat Me'ah, which does have Tumah B'Negaim, should apply by Olamait. But basically what you're saying is I'm going to extrapolate through a Kal V'Chomer from Negaim to Olamait. We should have the same problem we had before, which is that Negaim has a Chumrah. Negaim has the Chumrah of Sheti V'Erev. What happened to that question? So Tosafot asks it. You can see here there are two large Tosafot trying to deal with this issue, which is that Sheti and Erev cause you a problem again. Tosafot does a lot of acrobatics and doesn't get very far in trying to explain it. It's very difficult to explain this Gemara, given what we know from the previous Amud. In the end, Tosafot answers that possibly we're learning out of Kelim. And by utensils, Sheti and Erev have no relevance. So since they have no relevance by Kelim, that'll be a Chumrah that's not applicable in the situation that we're making the Kal V'Chomer. And by doing that, it can't break or ruin the logical argument to extrapolate from the Ga'im to Olamet. I will say that it's still very difficult, and that the Gemara, it's interesting, just makes the statement without addressing this issue. And Tosafot, you can see over here, both the Tosafot and the Tosafot Yishanim are trying to deal with that issue. Right now, the Gemara continues. Now, what are we going to do with this memory of Rav Yosef? Rav Yosef said before that everything that is Melechet Shamayim, anything that has to be done for the sake of heaven has to be done with kosher animals. So where is the application of that din? Because once we say that a skin of a non-kosher animal is included, then it's clear that we're not learning anything out from the din of the Ohel. Everything's called an Ohel, and even non-kosher skins. It doesn't teach us anything, so now we want to know what are the halachic implications of what Rabbi Yosef said. When it says, l'tfilin, we need to know if it's tfilin. Your tfilin have to be made out of kosher animal hides. So tfilin behejuktibu. Tfilin say it explicitly, which is not so explicit, but it says, Lamantiye Torah Hashem beficha, that the Torah Hashem has to be in your mouth. Mina mutar beficha has to be something that you could eat. So that which you can eat, you can use for your tfilin. So it had to be a kosher animal to use for your tefillin. Ela le'oran. That is for the boxes. The boxes in which the tefillin are housed, that we need to know that they are made out of kosher animals. Because the Manti Torat Hashem Beficha only teaches you things that are written. So it means the cloth that you write on has to be something that you could otherwise eat. It has to be a kosher animal. But the boxes, you don't write anything on the boxes. Since you don't write anything on the boxes, maybe they don't have to be from kosher animal, because then the Manti Torat Hashem Beficha doesn't apply to them. That's not so true. The tefillin shorosh have a shin imprinted on them. So that means that there is something written on them. If something written on them, then they automatically would require mina mutar beficha, that they be permitted to be eaten. And therefore, you'd only be allowed to use a kosher animal for the boxes. Ela lekorchan b'se'aran ulutofran begidin. They teach you that when you wrap the parshiot and you want to tie them up, you have to tie them up with a se'ar, from a hair from a kosher animal, u'tofran begidin, and to stitch them up, when you stitch either the batim, or if you had to put the cloth together, then you would have to do it with gidim. Se'hanami, alocha l'moshe misinayu. That's something that we know, because it's alocha l'moshe misinay, that we don't learn from this braita that is brought by Rav Yosef. Titanya, tefillin merubaot, alocha l'moshe misinay. The fact that tefillin have to be square is learnt out of the Aloch Ola Moshe Misinai. It's a Mesorah that we have. It's not written anywhere. Nichrochot b'si'aran b'nitferot b'gidan, that they are tied with hairs and stitched with gidim, with the sinews. Those are also Halacha the Moshe Misinai. So I don't need you to teach me that. Ela l'ritzuot. The teacher's about the straps. That the straps have to come from kosher animals. That the fact that the straps have to be black is also halacha l'moshe misinai. Where it says, "Nehi the gemiri shchorot, torot mi gemiri." The halacha l'moshe misinai only tells us what the color of the straps is; doesn't tell us what the straps have to be made out of. So therefore, the halacha that Rav Yosef comes to teach us is that the straps also have to come from kosher animals. What's interesting here is that as a machloket Rashi and Tosafot throughout Shas, the last time we had it was in Brachot Daf Vavam and Aleph. We had it actually, we discussed it there in Brachot Daf Vavam and Aleph. There, the Gemara is discussing about the Tefillin Shorosh, and it says, Veru kol amei aretz,
Kishem Hashem nikra lecha,
V'yareu mimecha, that the amei aretz will see you and fear you. The Gemara over there, darshans, what does it mean? To see you, they'll see your Tefillin Shorosh, and they will fear you. So Rashi says, why is it the Tefillin Shorosh? What's so special about them? Rashi says it's because the Rov Shem Hashem is found on the Tefillin Shorosh. Rov Shem Hashem is the name of Hashem, which is Shin, then Dalet, then Yud. The Shin is found on the Batim themselves. We know they were imprinted the Shin. The Dalet is the knot that you have behind your head. And the Yud is the knot in the Tefillin Shel Yad. It's down when you tie by the knot there, you have a Yud that sits on the Mabarta, that touches the Bayit. So Rashi says, out of the Shem Hashem, two out of the three letters on the Tefillin Shorosh. Throughout Shas, Tosfot says that's wrong. Can't say that, because the Ritzuot clearly are not writing. How does Tosavot know that there's no writing on the Ritzuot? Because Gemara here says, anything that has letters written on it, we know comes from a kosher animal. Therefore, cloth has to be from a kosher animal. Therefore, the batim have to be from a kosher animal because they have the shin on them. Therefore, according to Rashi, the Ritzuot would have to be from a kosher animal because they have an adalid and a yud written on them. Yet, our Gemara doesn't accept it. Our Gemara says, how do you know the Ritzuot come from a kosher animal? Because of Rav Yosef. That anything from Lechet Shemaim has to be from an Or Beima to Rabbi Ovad. They can't learn it out minam mutar beficha. They can't learn it out from the fact that it's written on the Ritzuot. Tosafot quotes our Gemara here as his proof. Everywhere he argues on Rashi, he quotes our Gemara as the proof. And one other Gemara, Ritzuot are considered to be Tashmishe Kedusha, not Kedusha. They're considered to be those that service something that's Kadosh, not Kadosh inherently in themselves. From there, Tosafot says that cannot be the explanation of what's special about the Shel Rosh, because the Ritzuot don't count. The letters on the Ritzuot are not what counts. And therefore, Tosafot here says, the difference between Shel Rosh and Shel Yad is that the Shel Rosh is visible, and the Shel Yad is on your yad, covered by your sleeve. And therefore, the reason that they're going to fear you is when they see the Shel Rosh, because that's the only thing they can't see. They don't see the tefillin Shel Yad. But not because of Rashi's suggestion. And this Gemara is Tosafot's proof throughout Shas that Rashi's wrong about counting letters in the Ritzuot. In defense of Rashi, you could say, what Shaul is suggesting, which is that there's a difference between imprinting or over there by the Tefillin Shel Rosh, we have it sticking out, but having a letter that's written versus forming a letter through the straps, which is not actually written in any way or formed in a sense. The truth is that the square seems to be a later development that they made the square for the knot, but those that do have it, they claim that it's two dalids together. That's why if you don't have any specific Masorah to have a square, then we'd opt to make a dalid unless you have a specific Masorah that says that would make it a square. Gemara says, Ma havi alo, de tachash sheya bimei Moshe. Gemara wants to know, what's the story with this tachash, the question that you asked before, which is, what's the din of tachash? What is a tachash in the end? What's the story with that? So, Amar Rabbi Lo, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Omer Rabbi Meir, tachash haya b'moshe, biriyah b'fnei atzmah haya. It's its own creation, it's its own entity. It's interesting, Rabbi Meir has this in many places in Mishnayot. The Rabbi Meir is of an opinion that an item that has a safek is considered to be a biriyah b'fnei atzmah. Another place is like an androgynous. Androgynous is both as male and female organs, sexual organs. Mishnayot discuss whether they have a din of zachar, din of nekeva, if you have a safek. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion it's biriyah b'fnei atzmah. It's its own entity. Same thing with koi in the Mishnah also. It's a safek chaya, safek behema. But it has properties of a chaya, properties of behema. It's an afkamina if you can eat the fats. Question if you need to say adam. So all these nafkamino there, and then again, Rabbi Meir says, biriyah b'fnei atzmah, its own entity. And here again, right, those original tachash, the tachash is biriyah b'fnei atzmah, its own entity. The safek about the tachash is what type of animal is this? Is it a chaya? Is it a behema? Kosher, non-kosher, what's the status of this animal? Meir comes again and says it's a biriyah b'fnei atzmah. V'lo hichriyo b'chachamim min chayahu, imin behemahu. Chachamim never could decide or never determine whether it was a chaya or behema. V'keren achat haita lo b'mitzko, it had a single horn. It was a unicorn. Ulofi sha'an izdamin lo l'moshe. And it was only at that time period of Moshe, period for that time. V'sam mimenu mishkan v'nignaz. He utilized it for the mishkan, and after that it went into Geniza. I don't know if that means it went extinct, or it was never used again, it disappeared. So mitikamar keren achat haita lo b'mitzko, shmaminat or haya. The fact that it has a single horn on it indicates that unicorn would have to be kosher. D'amar Rav Yehuda, shor shikriv adam rishon, keren achat haita lo b'mitzko. That the shor Avraham Rishon brought as a korban had a single horn and it was a unicorn as well. Shenemar, because the pasuk in Tehillim says,
"Titav
Hashem ishor par makrin mafris," was better than to Hashem like a shor par makrin and mafris. So makrin means it has karnaim, it has horns. Mafris is that it has split hooves. Where it says makrin tarte mashma. Makrin is a plural. So what do you mean a unicorn? That sounds like it had two horns over there. So Nachman by Yitzchak
makran.
Ktiv. Pasuk does not have a yud in it. So even though the kri, the reading of it is makrin, nevertheless the writing, the ktiv, the way it's written is written without a yud, which indicate that it was singular. And therefore the Gemara dashes for that it was a unicorn that Adam HaRishon brought, and that unicorn was mafris. It had split hooves and also was put on a korban, so it must have been a behema tehora. So too, it must be that the tachash is a behema tehora. I'm Rav Nachman Velisho Mine. So if that's the case, the min behemahu. Let us then conclude also that it's a behema. So the fact is that if it was brought on a korban, we know that chayot are not brought as korbanot. If that's the case, then it should also not only be kosher, it has to also be a behema. Gaiman di ka keresh de min chayahu, pelet le'ele chada keren, iklamemar min chayahu. Because we have this other animal, this keresh is from the deer family, that is a type of chaya. Pelet le'ele chada keren, it also is a unicorn. We have to say that it's also a chaya. So since we have other examples of animals that have a single horn that are classified as a chaya, we're not clear
that the tachash
was a behema, not a chaya, because unicorn is associated with a shor, behema.
But also a keresh, which is a chaya. So the tachash could be either like the shor that is mentioned by Adam Arishon, or the keresh. In both instances, it is a behema teorah. It's just a question of whether it is a chaya or a behema.
And it's true that when it comes to the mikdash, only behemot were brought on the mizbeach, not chayot. But the Tosefta in Zvachim does say that when it comes to a bama, it comes to the backyard karbanot that you bring, you are allowed to bring chayot on there, not just behemot. If that's the case, then we can't prove anything from the fact that Adam HaRishon brought it as a korban, or that it was called a shor. Even though it was called a shor,
but
there's other examples of animals that have a single horn or unicorn, and they're still classified as a chaya. All right, next Mishnah. Tilat abeged shekipla. If you have a tila that was made out of clothing, worn down clothing, what they do with the extra clothing was that they would twist them into tilot. Tilat abeged shekipla velohiv hava. They twisted it into, or twined it into a wick, but lo yivavah, they didn't singe it yet. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, tmeyahi. That is still tmeyah, meaning that it still has a din of beged. Beged is mekabel tuma, and if it was tmei beforehand, it still has a status of beged, or it can be mekabel tuma. Bein bandikim ba, and you may not use it to light on Shabbat. Rabbi Akiva Omer, tehorahi, it's lost its status of a beged. Once you twine or twist it into a wick, it's no longer a beged, therefore it's tahor. If it was tamei before, it's batel from being a kli or a beged now, and it's not tamei, or it will not be mekabel tuma. Uma dekimba, and you can light with it for Shabbat candles. So now Gemara says, Bishlama, I understand lenient tuma baha plige. What's their argument about when it comes to tuma? The Rabbi Eliezer Savar kipul enu moil. Rabbi Eliezer says it's not sufficient to just twist it. That's not enough to remove the name of beged from it. That status, if you take a piece that's 3x3 etzvaot, which is a derivative of a larger beged that was tamei, that doesn't ruin its standing as a beged just because you twisted it. And therefore it remains a beged. Once you've twisted it into a wick, that already removes the name of beged from it. The question is, what can you do to remove the shame tuma from it? Generally, you need a maaseh, you need an action to remove tuma from an item. If you want to be mevatel that item and change its status, you have to do something in action. Rabbi Akiva says it's sufficient to twist it into a wick. That's an action that removes it from being a beged anymore. Rabbi Eliezer says that's not sufficient. Not only do you have to twist it, you have to singe it so that it's ready to be used as a wick. As far as lighting as a wick, what is the problem here? It's a fine wick. You're lighting it on Erev Shabbat. There's no problems of muksa, there's no problem of anything else. What is the issue with using this wick? Dealing with a cloth that is exactly 3x3 etzba'ot. We're dealing with it where it was Yom Tov going into Shabbat. Again, on a normal weekday, there's no issue because on a normal weekday, we don't care what you light with. There's no din of muksa, there's no din of mevatel kli me'echano. None of these restrictions that apply on Shabbat would apply on a weekday. But on Yom Tov, going into Shabbat, where you are permitted to light Shabbos candles, but it's Yom Tov. And Yom Tov has the name of Muksa. The Kuliyama Yit Lehuda Rabbi Yehuda. Everybody subscribes to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, which is, Mitzigim Bekelim, Veim Mitzigim Beshidrei Kelim. One, when it has a fire on Yom Tov, can use whole utensils to heat up the fire, but they may not use Shivrei Kelim, broken shards of Kelim, to either stoke or to heat the fire. That's because Rabbi Yehuda believes there's muksa. And if you brought in a kli into Yom Tov that was a whole kli, and then it breaks on Yom Tov, you have what we call nolad. The kli has now changed its status. It once had utility as a utensil, as a kli. Now it breaks, and now the shards are something else. That's nolad. That's something new that happened on Yom Tov, and that's called muksa, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, if you have a whole kli, a kli you can carry on Shabbat, you can use it on Shabbat and Yom Tov because that's the way it came in to Yom Tov. And therefore you can use that for the fire according to Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, if you have shivrei kelim, you have shards of kelim, they are no lot, they are muksa, and therefore you can't carry them on Yom Tov and can't use them for the fire on Yom Tov. Both Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva subscribe to that. That's number one. Broke on Yom Tov. Not that came in as shards into Yom Tov, right? Because if they already came in as shards, that was their designation coming into Yom Tov. Kuliyama idlu ula, and everybody subscribes to the position of ula, which we saw earlier. Damar ula, madlik zirik shalik barova yotze. When you light the wick, you can't just light it. You have to hold the flame there until the majority of the wick takes in order for it to be good for the Shabbat candles. So now, Rabbi Eliezer, Savar Kipul and Umoil. Kipul doesn't change the status from what it was before. It was a beged, and now it still is a beged. It came into Adik Bay Purta, Havile Shever Kli. What's the minimum size or standard of a beged? 3x3 etzbot. So when you have the 3x3 etzbot over here, and you twist it into a wick, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's still a beged. Still has the same beged. As soon as you light that wick, it's now dropped below 3x3. Drops below 3x3, now you have what's called Shivrei Kelim. You have a shard or a leftover of a utensil or an item that was an item before. Before it was a beged. Now it's lost its status as a beged. Then you hold you fire there till the wick catches on the rove. What are you doing? You're lighting Shivrei Kelim. You're lighting something that's muksa. Kigamadlik, b'shevri klikamadlik, and that's not permitted. Rekiva Savar, kipul moil. Then when you twist it into a wick, obviously you had to twist the wick before Yom Tov. You didn't twist the wick before Yom Tov, then you're doing the same thing on Yom Tov. You're taking a beged and ruining it on Yom Tov itself into something else, which you can't do. So we're giving Sarah Kipul Moyo, it was twisted before Yom Tov. Vein Torah Kli Alav, it's no longer a beged. If it's not a beged, Chika Madlik, Beitz Baal Mekah Madlik. If you're lighting, you're not lighting something that was a whole item, now is less than a whole item. It was never a whole item. It was just like any other wick. It was like something that was originally a wick. So I'm Rav Yosef, I know the Tanina. Now I understand what we learned. Gimel al gimel mitzumah tzumot. My Rebbeim taught me that it was 3x3 exactly. And I didn't know what that was referencing. I didn't know what the reference for that was. Now that Rav Adar Rav explains our Mishnah, now I know what that halacha is referencing. And the fact that Rav Adar Rav explains our Mishnah according to Rabbi Yehuda, that both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer subscribe to the position of Rabbi Yehuda that muksa applies on Yom Tov, it must be that Rav Adar Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And the question is, does Rabbi Adar Rav really subscribe to the position of Yehuda that there is muksa? So if a non-Jew carves out of a log a kav. A kav can either be a measure, that was a measuring cup that he was making, or a prosthetic out of this log, which is nolad, something that's created in Yom Tov. Yisrael masika b'Yom Tov. You can use that for your firewood on Yom Tov. Vamai, nolad hu. That's nolad. That means that it's muksa. Muksa you're not allowed to use on Yom Tov. If you subscribe to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, you can't use it on Yom Tov. So the Gemara answers like Sha'ol suggested before, the divrehem, the Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Akiva, kamarle. Rav Adar Rav is explaining the machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Not that that's what he believes. That's not his position in halacha. But he's just explaining. That's the only way to explain them in the Mishnah. And therefore, he says it. Rav Amar, Rav gives an alternative explanation. You're not allowed to light a wick going into Shabbat that was not singed first. Because if it's not singed first, it will not burn easily or well. And we know from the earlier Mishnayot in the Perek that we always want something that burns well going into Shabbat so they don't tinker with it on Shabbat itself. So it's not an issue of Nola, it's not an issue of Muksa. The Mishnah can be explained simply as, how good a wick do you have? Rabbi Akiva suggests that twisting it is sufficient to make it into a good wick. Rabbi Eliezer says, until it's singed, it's not a good enough wick to light with it on Shabbat because it may not take as well, may not burn as well. If that's the case, then you're going to have problems on Shabbat. So then, what are we going to do with that statement of Rabbi Yosef that he had a mesor from his Rebbeim that we're talking about exactly 3x3 etzbaot? What was that about? L'inyan tuma. That's for tuma. That's none. Gimel gimel shamru chutz min amalau. Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Chomim armim gimel gimel mikuvanot. When we say 3x3 etzbaot is tamei by begadim. We learned this the last 2 days in the Dapim. We know that 3x3 etzbaot is still classified as a beged to mimkabu tuma because an ani would store it and use it for a patch. So now you have 3x3 etzbaot. We know that whenever you use a cloth, they also use a hem, a round cloth. That hem takes up a certain amount of the material. So do you need 3x3 bags both, excluding the hem or including the hem? So we have a machloket Tanaim about that, which is Rabbi Shimon says, Gimel Gimel Shamru Chutz Min Amalal, excluding the hem. Divrei Rabbi Shimon. The Chachamim say, no, Gimel Gimel Kuvanot. Even 3x3 etzvot, which afterwards, when you make the hem, will make it less than 3x3 etzvot, that's sufficient. 3x3 etzvot is the, what they call in Israel, bruto, even though the net will be less than 3x3 once you put the hem on it. The gross number is 3x3, even though the net number will be less than 3x3 once you make the hem around this patch. And that's what Rabbi Yosef's statement was about. Gimel gimel mitzumtzamot. It's exactly 3x3 etzvot, including the hem. And even though afterwards, when you make the hem, it'll be less than 3x3, that's, the halacha is like the chachamim, that it's exactly 3x3, and we don't worry about what you do with it, or how you use it afterwards, when you make a hem, don't make a hem. That's it, 3x3 is the number, and that's where the din of Rav Yosef applies. Tosfot says over here, first of all, that over here, we really should have written rabo, and not rovo. But nearly, and this is interesting, that the minhag that people have, men have, to light these Shabbos candles before Shabbos, and then extinguish them. It's brought down by halacha, that the man should light the candles, then extinguish it after, make it easy for the woman to light the wick after, as makes the wick. He says, the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer. So if that's the reason behind the machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, we're going to paskin like Rabbi Akiva. And if we paskin like Rabbi Akiva, then why do you need to have this minog? And this is a type of ptila that specifically needs to be singed. Ptila that we like, we don't need to be singed. So, what is our practice? Tosfot rejects this practice. Even though the halacha, we do bring it down, that there is this idea of singeing it. Two reasons. One reason is that it should be easier for the woman to light afterwards, but the other reason is that the man should have a chilek in the lighting of the candles, the lakat nerot Shabbat, even though the woman is the primary lighter of the Shabbat candles, that the man should have a chilek as part of it, as well as be active in the preparations of Shabbat. All right, we'll stop over here.